Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Solar Records Radio. Yes, it is another Throwback Thursday night. I am your host, Don Fleming. For the next 2 hours, I'm going to be jamming old school R&B, funk, and soul for you. Of course, I got my partner, Wardell Potts Jr. hanging out with me. What's going on, Wardell?
Wow, man, I'm just excited, man, about you. The interview,
that we're about to have with this brother, and what a legacy he has. So I'm really looking forward to it. I did my show already earlier and had a great time just, you know, reminiscing and doing my throwback show, but this is special, and I wanted to make sure I got on here to say hello and just chop it up with you guys. So thanks for the invite.
Man, no problem. The person I got on the show is a legend, a legendary, of course. You can put all adjectives, you know, legendary, just accomplished brother, of course, been in the game. Of course, all y'all contemporaries. So, you know, we got keyboardist, producer, songwriter, drummer, any other thing. He's probably going to correct me on, but guys, let's welcome to Solar Records Radio, of course, Throwback Thursday night, the legendary Hubert Eaves III. What's up, brother? What's going on, man?
Hey, y'all, man. I'm just chilling and willing to do this and, you know, have some fun. Go see some throwbacks. And Wardell Potts, you know, I forgot who you was, man, but you reminded me.
And, it's all good.
All I could do was smile, brother.
Man, I just want you to go next door and get me a Philadelphia cheesesteak hoagie.
Well, that ain't quite next door, though.
from where I am, it is. Lord have mercy. Oh, my goodness. Ray, man, it's so nice to hear you, man, to hear your voice and, you know, and to talk about your legacy. So I'm going to let Mr. Don Fleming, allow you to help.
Man, it's all good.
What's that?
It's all good. I'm just glad that you're on hanging out with me because, of course, I have two contemporaries in the industry, two legends. I just feel like a kid in a candy store right now. But I want to go ahead and just kind of start this off again because we talked about just this whole Minnesota thing. We were talking about Ohio. It was something in the water in the 70s in Ohio. But definitely Minnesota was doing this thing. Of course, we had Rocky Robbins on the show last week. And, of course, we had Jellybean Johnson from the time, of course, Minneapolis. This brother, of course, is from the Twin Cities. He's from St. Paul. But
really?
I want to go ahead and kind of just get this started. Yeah, he's from the Twin Cities. Talk a little bit about just your upbringing growing up. I mean, was there any – and I know it's a little cliche to talk about it, but I got to ask, growing up in St. Paul, was there a lot of like musical influence, especially when it came to black music, whether it was jazz or R&B? The floor is yours.
Well, you know, I came up in what we call the ghetto of St. Paul, which is an area called Rondo Street. And I put out a song about 5 years ago with some friends, and we went back and got all the guys that we used to play with back then, the ones that were still alive, and put together a song called Rondo Street. But anyway, there were people like I had, my uncle was a drummer for a band called the Amazers, and they were big up in the Midwest, and then I had a cousin who sang with the Cadillacs and different groups, and my dad was the one that got me started because he played piano and guitar. Nothing professional, but just enough to get me going. And we had a pretty thriving music scene amongst us because, you know, there wasn't a whole lot of us, but we all hung with each other. So it made it seem like the whole world was us. but we played back then, I used to play drums too. So I would play in the bands, playing drums, dances, and different functions like that. Because I started when I played keyboard, piano, back in those days, all they had was some old beat up upright pianos, man, that was, I'd tear my fingers up. My fingers would be bleeding sometimes, man, just from trying to make, I could never be heard. So after each gig, I would go sit on the drums and play. And I have to say that I kind of had a natural feel for drums. Plus, I just loved it. You know, I'm just, that's why I'm very rhythmic, because I just, that was just who I am.
Go ahead, Bordell. Go ahead.
I just want to ask this question before we get too far away from it. When you went back to get your friends from the hood that you grew up in with, what exactly did you have them do to participate on the song for your record?
Okay, well, what happened was two of my homeboys came to visit me, and I took them down into my studio, my basement studio, and they both play guitar. So they, while I was eating, they were putting together a little track. They put together a couple of melodies together, and so when I came downstairs, I checked it out. I said, "Oh man, let me put some chords to this. Let me, oh yeah, let's put this together." So we put it together, and neither one of them produce records. They're great guitar players, but they don't produce anything. So they asked me to finish it, and that was before the idea even came about. But then as I was thinking about it, I was like, man, this would be cool to go get all the dudes that we played with, that we came up with, and put little pieces of them. And, you know, I even got people on there that don't play, just had them quote some of their memories and stuck that up in there too. So you hear this little commotion of voices. Yeah, man, I remember back in the day, he said those kind of things. It was a real fun project, and this was amazing to show you how timing works. After we got it done, the whole thing, got everybody contributing. You know, I went to St. Paul, took my little portable recorder, recorded the bass player in my hotel room, recorded one of the guitar players in my car in the back seat in a parking lot. So it was a crazy project. But what happened was, the song was called Rondo Street. Little did we know that there was a school of black kids had a school of the arts, and they had put together a movie video of what was going on back in the day in St. Paul, and they chose that song as the theme song. Now, plus now it's on Netflix, and it got 5 stars. It talks about, and it was just an idea.
Nice.
To show how things develop. We didn't make any money off of it, but that's not the point. That was not the point.
But the song is on Netflix. And is it like in a movie?
Yeah, it's in the, if you go on Netflix, I believe it is, you can see it's called In the Pavement, Rondo in the Pavement, yeah. And it's the theme song at the end.
Awesome.
Okay.
I'm emotional about it because I know that this is not the big scheme of things, Don, but it's just, you got to think about this man's heart, right? See, I always had to get down to the heart of things. It's like, and then what, and all these people, because a lot of times we go away and we forget about the people that we grew up with that helped mold us into the person that we actually are, and we forget about them.
Mm-hmm.
But so for him to go back and say, hey, let's do something together. Let's do something together that just will show, you know, our love for each other and what we did, you know, just growing up together. Now he makes me want to do that. So that's why I want to know exactly what their participation was, because most of the people on my street weren't musicians, but they still love me and they follow me and they're always, you know, they support me and everything. So I want to do the same thing. I want to have them participate on the record. And you said some of those people would just be talking in the background and stuff like that. And that's a beautiful thing. So thank you, first of all, for doing that for your friends, and second of all, for sharing it with us.
And let me just add one other little thing, and that is one of the brothers we came up with as teenagers. Once I left to come to New York, and I went to California first and all that, I said, hey, man, one of these days we're going to work together. One of these days. Well, it was about maybe 30, 40 years, and we never got to do anything for whatever reason. But by the time when we did this Rondo project, he was in a wheelchair, right?
Wow.
And he was a lead blues singer. So I said, hey, man, I need you to sing on this. I need you to sing. And he said, no, man, I have no voice, man. I'm out. I'm done. I said, no, I got to get you on here. Just saying something. I don't care what it is. You got to be on here. So we got him on there singing one little hook line. And once the project was done, about 3 weeks later, he passed away.
Oh.
And that lead singer passed away after that. So
wow.
But I got a chance to say to him, and he got a chance to say, "Man, thank you. We did our project." But here's the thing that I want to say to you, Wardell. That's why you got to do it, man, because you just never know when people, you know, you catch them now. Do it now. If you feel this inspires you, do it.
Yeah, you never know when God's calling.
Wow, man.
So, go ahead, John.
Jump into this. No, you're good. I'm loving the conversation because, like I said, it's too contemporary. You guys both have, you know, not to sound too cliche, but you guys both have this jazz background too. But let me go ahead and ask this, Hubert. Who are some of your musical influence? I know your dad, you said your dad was a musician, but who are some of your musical influence as far as, you know, from the, you know, from the industry or anything like that, if you will?
Well, I mean, first of all, I had a young brother who was a couple of years older than me who was kind of like my mentor in St. Paul. He was from Minneapolis, and he was probably the only guy I had to work with at the time was Bobby Lyle. And you may have heard of him, but also I used to listen to Ray Charles and Ahmad Jamal, and as I, you know, started getting more into jazz and all, then of course I fell in love with Herbie Hancock and Miles Davis and John Coltrane and McCoy Tyner and you know, there's a whole school of guys, but those were probably my main influences at that point. And so much so that I had to even stop listening to them because I felt I was too much into it, so I needed to be able to try to figure out who I was.
Okay. And I understand you had the, you know, of course, this, the migration to California, and I want to jump a little bit ahead because of just the jazz influence. I want to take it to what, around 1976. You have this brilliant album, Esoteric Funk, and I want to play a song from it. But talk a little bit about just the making of that album, just the roots. It's something that just seems rooted. I got a chance to just hear that whole album earlier today, and it's something that's very organic about that album. Talk a little bit about it, and I want to go ahead and get into a song. I don't want to hold you up too long, but I'm definitely loving this vibe. I'm loving getting the chance to just get to know you and get to just know your journey. And talk a little bit about Esoteric Funk and just this whole jazz influence and whatnot.
Yeah, well, back in the 70s, you know, I was doing gigs mostly, and they were all jazz, you know, playing with a lot of great names like Roy Haynes and Stanley Turrentine you know, just a lot of big names that were people that I always wanted to play with and who I idolized kind of as I was growing up. So once I got the chance to, I remember my friend Reggie Lucas, who rest in peace. He told me, "Some man, a company in Japan that wants to record you, and you know, to do a solo album." And I said, "Oh man, I would love that, man. I would want to do it." And so I got excited, and then I just went into, you know, I was so busy at the time just trying to be myself and not even thinking about anything. I was caught up in the moment, you could say, of just who I was or who I am. And that was the result of that. And I had all these guys that were friends of mine that who I respected. They respected me. We you know, we kind of loved each other. We hung out with each other in the sense that we, you know, because we were doing gigs together, different ones. And, you know, like Howard King, who was playing drums. My man M. Tume was playing percussion. You know, rest in peace with him. He just left us. Reggie Lucas, gone.
Rest in peace.
And I had, you know, my man Harry Whitaker helping me out. Rest in peace with him, another keyboard player. So, you know, I just did what felt very natural, and I tried to do as much as I could. You know, I didn't know that it was going to be so overwhelming because I had to wear all the hats in the sense that, you know, I wrote the songs, produced the songs, and, you know, I had to rehearse and make sure everything was as tight as I could get it. and had no clue that it was going to take that much work. But now, in retrospect, I'm proud of it because it was not a big nationwide type hit record or album, but there are people in a lot of different places that contact me that claim that, you know, it's a classic album to them. And
it
that's,
really is.
To me, that, you know, that makes it special. And I've only done one album in my life, and that's it. I've worked with every, you know, so many other people, but that's the only solo album that I've ever done.
And it's definitely an amazing album. I want to get into Painful Pleasure. Wardell, did you have anything to say? I'm sorry.
I have so much to say, so you better just.
Of course you do.
I do. I have so much to say because, you know, come from the same cloth, so to speak. So, first of all, just for the sake of the audience, for the listening audience that may not know as much about you as like Don and myself, can you share just some of the people that you've worked with throughout your career?
A long list.
I know. Just give us a second.
We were joking earlier on text messages about his category, man. But it's one of those things where you want to compress it into this, you know, 25-30 minute interview. But I mean, this brother has a great category. But
catalog.
Go ahead.
Okay, well, I have to read it because I'll forget.
Yeah, I get that. I understand, brother. I know what you're talking about.
But, you know, I'm including people that I've played with, written, and arranged or produced kind of thing.
Yeah.
That would be Luther Vandross. I wrote 8 songs with Luther.
Wow.
Madonna. Madonna. Whoa. I song on the soundtrack. Prince did one of my songs. Teddy Pendergrass, I did an album with him. Whitney Houston, I wrote a song with Luther for, you know, Luther and I did a duet for her. We did a duet for Aretha Franklin. Biggie Smalls sampled one of my songs. Rick Ross sampled one. Yo-Yos and okay, of course, Miles Davis did one of my songs, Rakim.
Wow.
I used to play live with Gary Barks. We recorded about 3 or 4 hours. Jackie McLean, Roberta Flack, Cheryl Lynn, Two Men.
Yes.
Stephanie Mills.
I told you.
Mariah Carey.
Yes.
Norman
yes,
Connors.
Yes, yes.
Jocelyn Brown. And, of course, my main thing I did 5 albums with was D-Train.
And of course we're gonna talk about that a little later. And plus, I gotta talk about as far as just the hip hop and the bridging that generational gap a little later on in the show. But I'm gonna go ahead and play Painful Pleasure. Is there anything you want to say before I go ahead and play it, as far as kind of intro into it? And we're gonna take a quick break for all those who are out there listening to the show. This is a great show, if I do say so myself. We got the legendary Hubert Eaves III hanging out with us. But you got something to kind of to say on Painful Pleasure before I go ahead and play it?
No, just enjoy it. I hope you enjoy it. That's all.
Well, guys, hey, it's simple as that, guys. Let's take it back to around 1976, early 1977. Of course, we have today's featured artist, Mr. Hubert Eaves. The name of the song is called Painful Pleasure. You guys keep it locked.
I have to go.
Listening to Solar Records Radio. Of course, it is Throwback Thursday night. I'm your host, Don Fleming. Of course, Wardell Fox Jr. hanging out with me. And tonight's featured guest, of course, what I just played, by the way, I did it for a reason. Of course, from 1976, music from Norman Conner's name of the song is called You Are My Starship, one of my all-time favorite slow jams. Of course, before I started off this block, tonight's featured artist, Mr. Hubert Eves III. Of course, that is Painful Pleasure from the Esoteric Funk album. Norman Conner's, I get a little Philadelphia connection there. Of course, Wardell is from Philadelphia. Working with Norman Conner's and Michael Henderson. Yes, working with Michael Henderson on lead. And I want to get into, you mentioned Ray G. Lucas and Entombe. You was a part of Entombe too, but I want to talk about that in just a moment. But talk a little bit about working with Norman Conner's on this song. And your connection with You Are My Starship.
Okay, I was out in L.A. playing with Gary Bartz, and I had done some gigs with Norman, and I think he brought Onaje out to do the arrangement, and Onaje, you know, I think Onaje said we need two keyboard players on this. So I was in town, and Norman calls me, from what I remember. And anyway, we go in, and we hear the song, and it's like, wow. You know, at the point that we did it, Michael's voice wasn't on it. So we just had all we had to focus on the groove, just the vibe of it. And Onaje was playing an electric piano, and he was playing like some of the effects, Echoplex, they called it back then. And I was playing grand piano. And so we just vibed with that song, man. It was just nice. We'd look at each other while we were playing, because it was all live, and just smile at each other, you know. And again, Onaje, rest in peace, my brother. We lost him too, just last year. So anyway, in regards to the song, I'll try to keep it, you know, keep it moving. It was a fun song to do, great song, and it's, believe me, it's a lot of people's favorite song, and I'm proud to have played on the song for that reason too. In fact, today I just called out to Michael. I left a message because I saw on Facebook that he was in the hospital, and I just wanted to know. I was just trying to check on him, so I'm waiting to hear back from him.
Get better, brother. Please get better, Michael Henderson. Why the receiver? That's my jam. Go ahead, Wardell.
Yeah, we were on the road with Michael Henderson, and he's absolutely an amazing musician and performer, and we had a good time on the road with him. We did an East Coast tour with Dynasty and Michael Henderson, and that was very interesting. Actually, Midwest and a little East Coast. But I want to ask you, how did you get your break? Where did you first cut into the professional realm? How did all these people start to know who you were and just start making phone calls like, I need you to come play on this, I need you to do that? Where did your break start? Who gave you your break?
Well, back in the day, when I first got to New York, which is back in, I think, 71 or 2, you know, the scene in New York was just thriving, man. Everywhere, people were playing, people were hanging out, and it's just a lot of musicians to look up to, and jam sessions where you could go sit in and stuff like that. And you know, so I came to New York at a good time. So I was just hanging out. I wanted to meet people. I wanted to, you know, interact. I wanted to sit in and play.
Right.
And, you know, it was just
That's
a
what
fun
we did.
Time. That's what it was. You know, you ask somebody, can you play? And if you can, you know, you play. And if you can hang, you know, somebody will say, hey, man, I got a gig, such and such. Can you make it? Yeah. Oh, man, yeah, there's a cat named Hubert Eads, man. He was cool with the gig, man. You might want to call him if you need such and such. Such and such. And but I will say this, you know, so I did a lot of jazz albums back then, in those days. And but because I came up playing funk and R&B and blues, my ears was always tuned to, you know, both. And so when I got with, you know, Reggie and Amtume and so forth, when we would do kind of jazz gigs like Norman Connors and all, you know, Reggie was writing and Amtume was writing. I was writing, but I wasn't really into it like they was, you know, in the real commercial writing. So once I, you know, but we were so cool as friends, once they would, you know, like Reggie would call me and say, hey, man, I got a song that I want to do. I want to come by and let's go through it. Let's go through it. So I would naturally want to overplay because I was coming from more of the jazz at that, especially during that period. And Reggie would relax me and say, no, man, just keep it simple, man. Just keep it like this. And so they were really, you know, influenced by the Philly sound, Gamblin' Huff. You know how those hit records were. As a keyboard player, you played your pads, you played your, unless you played something, you know, special, it was meant to be, mostly.
Yes, sir.
And,
yes, sir.
And so I got a good schooling with that. You know, so as I got better at it, you know, I started getting more calls to do that. And but I credit them for helping me to get to that point, because if it hadn't been left up to me, I'd have been doing some solos all the way through some of those R&B songs, man.
So what made you leave your home to go to New York?
I went to California first, man, because I couldn't take it anymore. It was 60 degrees below zero with the wind chill factor, and I had a flat tire, and I had to change the tire in the snow. And I said, man,
wow.
I'm slated for this SH, you know the rest.
Yeah,
and
right.
So,
right.
My brother-in-law, you know, talked me into coming out there and staying with him until I could get off my feet. And, you know, because I knew the songs of what was happening in the clubs, I went to a club I sat in, and the people got excited. You know, there was a new person in town. They're like, oh, man, there's a new dude in town. He can play. And so, you know, people were dancing, and the club owner was happy, and he asked me to would I like to take over the band. And I was like, whoa, wait a minute, man. I didn't want to have no tension with anybody. And so the keyboard player who was at the club said, look, man, I'll never forget this. He said, look, man, I'm a school teacher. I don't need this. He said, brother, you young, you got this. You're a talented brother. Here, you take this gig, man, and do it. Go on and do it. I never, ever in life forget that, man. And I try to be the same way, because he graciously bowed out and let me have it.
Wow.
I built it up. And, you know, we had people coming from all over, man, just to dance and to drink and have fun. But after 2 years of that, to answer your question, I decided, man, a guy came in. He sat in California, and he had a bass. And he said, look, man, you belong in New York. He said, you need to come to New York, man, you know. And I was afraid. I was kind of like, you know, apprehensive about it. But I wanted to come. And at that point, man, I got so frustrated with, you know, doing the same songs, doing the same things at the club in California, that I said, man, I'm going for it. So I talked to my wife, and we decided that that's what we were going to do. So we sold all our furniture. We took the car we had. I drove it to Minneapolis and sold it to my dad. And my dad gave me his blessings and a few extra dollars and said, go. And
wow.
That's how I got to New York. So, you know, and like I said, you know, I told you about the scene. So that's
right.
What led up to that.
Okay.
Oh man.
Excellent.
I got
so many stories.
Amazing
story.
I love them.
I got so many stories that's why I'm gonna put it together in a book, man. I've already decided, because I have so many stories, man, and they come out when people ask me certain things. And I've been doing a lot of different interviews lately, and I'm saying, wait a minute, man, I need to do my own interview, you know, because I got so much stuff that I can't cover in a, you know, just like we're doing a, you know, what, 15-minute, 30-minute interview? I can't even cover all the stuff that I'd like to say, so I'm going to do it in the book.
This is excellent.
That's amazing.
Man. I just got to say that I'm really, even though you're older than me, it doesn't matter, because it's people like you that helped pave the way for me. And so I just want to tell you how proud I am of you for taking that risk and just going for what you love, and, you know, just following your heart. Because a lot of people, a lot of us, and you know that, some of your friends never left home. You know, I left Philadelphia to go pursue my career. You left your home to go pursue your career. And a lot of times people don't do that. So it really takes, you know, like, it really takes guts and confidence in what you do. And also it takes faith in following your dreams and stuff. And so I'm proud that you did that. And I'm glad that God blessed you along the way. And you left this amazing legacy, you know, for your family to be able to follow and say, man, look what he did. Look what he did. Look what he did. And so that's awesome, man. That's a job well done. When I heard the list of all the people that you work with, man, you know, it brought tears to my eyes because I know that's not easy. A lot of people get to work with one or two, you know, big acts, and they're good for life.
Mm-hmm.
But if you cover up a whole wall of people that you work with. And so what a blessing it is to be able to sit here and talk to you, first of all, and but just to hear your story is great. So like you told me, do it. Don't forget. Just don't forget to do your book. You need to interview yourself and do your book and get it done.
Yes, you're absolutely right. Thank you for that. And I will say this for people that are listening, man, that, you know, hopefully this can inspire them too. The concept that I had, and I don't know where I picked it up from or if it came to me, how it got to me, but the bottom line is it came to this. In order to find out if you can sink or swim, you got to jump in the water.
Absolutely. That's right.
Ain't that true?
That is
Ain't
it.
That the truth?
You have to.
Well,
you have to. But
you got to.
Sometimes when we're young, right, and we just love what we do so much that we'll just jump in with not really a whole lot of caution. We're just going for it. Like, come on, I got to do this. And then you start to realize, whoa, man, I'm just out there. I remember getting out there and was like, I was so broke. And I called my dad and I said, Dad, I think I want to come home. And my dad said, listen, you could always come home. He said, but this is what you wanted. So go ahead on and do it. So it's so important also to have a support system around these kids that are trying to do the things that we were able to accomplish, because without a support system, it makes it even that much harder. And so you told me about what your dad said to you and did for you and said, go ahead. See, those words of, you know, support mean a lot to us. And so, you know, God bless you, man. God bless you.
God has blessed me, man, with a wife who, from day one, has always been my support system, man. So I couldn't have done it without her, being by my side and all that. And now, you know, we've got grown kids and grandkids and my son, you're gonna be hearing about him if you haven't already, because he is knocking him dead, man, with his new project that's out. Man,
okay.
I'm so proud of him. You got to check
man,
him out.
Yes. Definitely.
New song.
What's his name?
His name is Hubert Eves the Fourth.
Come on. Fourth. I was going to jump in front of you. That's Hubert Eves the Fourth.
Yeah, and he's from Minneapolis, too.
Awesome.
He was born in Minneapolis, man. And he's killing him, man. He's played with, he was in the band with.
What does he play?
He plays drums and bass. And he writes
what?
And. Purdue, oh man, he's played with Gerald Albright. He's played with Erykah Badu. Remember that song called "Think I Better Call Tyrone"?
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
That's him. That's him playing bass.
Oh, okay, Don. His son's playing bass.
I have to go back and listen to that.
Yeah.
I got Badu.
Yeah,
listen to that. I gotta go back and listen to that. And let's fast forward just a little bit, because one of the things I was always amazed, especially from a keyboard player, that going from that jazz funk sound in the 70s, in the late 70s, going into that synth funk sound into the 80s, or kind of that new wave synth sound. Did you ever feel that was a hard transition, or was it one of those things that you didn't really, it wasn't really a difference?
No, I loved it, man. When I heard that there was a new thing out called MIDI, which means MIDI means that when you can connect more than one keyboard, you can play one keyboard, but it'll translate to multiple keyboards and stuff like that.
Yeah, it triggers the other keyboards.
Triggers the others, yeah. I got all excited, and then when I remember talking to my wife, man, before, this was just before D-Train, and when I was playing with him too, man, there was a guy who named Ed Walsh. He had all the latest electronic keyboards, and Toomey would call him in to do the all the electronic keyboard stuff, the synthesizer stuff. And I would kind of lay back. And in some ways, I have to be honest with you, I was a little envious because I didn't have that stuff, but I was hearing what I wanted to hear. I was just saying, man, if I had that, no telling what I could do with it. And so when I got the chance, me and my wife got together and I said, look, you know, there's a new Prophet 5, the synthesizer that just came out. And I read about it. I'm all excited. And we decided we just saved the money and I got it, man. And
what year was this?
This was 1980.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Maybe late 79.
Was it the R Quadrant?
Okay.
And so once I got that, I just spent so much time, man. I mean, hours and hours just programming and playing with it. And I mean, you couldn't pull me away from that thing, man. And so I programmed all the sounds that I used for D-Train. The first song was, which was You're the One for Me. And it was the number one song right out of the box. So, you
man.
Know, number one song. So we were like,
look
oh
up.
My God. And then
we
and,
did it.
And so, yeah, we did it. And I was so I was so into it that, you know, my goal became, oh man, I think I want to have an all keyboard band. Nothing but keyboards. I want the bass player to be the keyboard bass. I want, you know, of course, we tried it and we went on the road with it for a while. But then I needed a guitar. I needed some guitar stuff because there's nothing like having a real guitar player or, you know, horns and so forth. So that quickly went away. But still, you know, D-Train is still mostly keyboards. Besides James's voice.
Yes. Man, well, I want to talk about what you got.
I just want to ask him a musician's question.
Okay.
He might ask you a question. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah, feel free. But this is something that you said something earlier that triggered something in me. And so I want to ask you about this MIDI thing. Okay, so for me, like all the stuff that we recorded before MIDI and stuff came out, everybody was playing their part. There was no sequencing. It was everybody play your part. And so then all of a sudden what happened was then when they started sequencing stuff, it started affecting the musicianship because the musicians were not just playing what they felt anymore. They would almost the stuff would be pre-programmed. And so you don't have this natural thing that happens in the studio. Like in 1976, when you went in the studio to record your jazz album, everybody was playing their parts because there was no sequencer. We were all playing your parts. So do you see the difference between what is your thoughts about playing live in the studio versus sequencing stuff in the studio?
I am so glad you brought that up, brother. So glad, because I definitely have feelings about it. That first D-Train album, there's no sequencing at all. It was all live, you know.
Wow.
And that to me, and the second album I did with D-Train was for the most part live. That's when I started experimenting with sequencing and so forth. And I'm going to be honest with you. The more I got into sequencing and electronics with the programming, the least effective my music was.
Yes.
You know, and I realized
I
it. Yeah, in time, in retrospect, I had to say, man, live is... That's why I try to keep live music, and I try to make my son, he understands it too, man. Even his new stuff is all live, you know. Them sequences, they get in the way, man.
Yes.
But, I mean,
it's a natural thing.
Yeah. I mean, they're cool for certain things now. There's a way to incorporate them both, too. Yeah.
Absolutely. And it's great for songwriting.
Yeah.
It's great for songwriting because you can't, you know, if you're just by yourself and you want to play all the parts and put it together and get an idea to present your song, great. But then you can go in the studio and have real musicians come in and play those parts.
Yeah, well, you know what? I realized after the second album, after I did the second album with D-Train, I realized I was becoming a victim of my own self.
Yeah.
And I, you know, and I said, wait a minute. No, you know, and so you've got to make sure that, you know, you don't tell the, you don't let the electronics tell you what to do. You tell them what to do.
Exactly. Exactly.
You know, and that's what you talk about there. You talk about, I mean, it's one of the things I've heard somewhere else is someone talk about how they're not going to let just the technology of it just consume them. It just handles in an organic way. And I love the way that you guys have just taken control of that, man. And wow. Go ahead.
Well, you know, can I say this? That's one thing I love about the rappers, man. The good ones, especially. You know, they took a drum machine, and a lot of them would play those drum machines and turn the quantization off, which quantization can make it perfect. And they would turn that off and put their own natural feel to it. Or even if they kept it on, the rapping was so loose in the way that they approached it. They sang on top of it, on the sides of it, on the bottom of it, all around that machine. And that's why people love it, because they love that live feel.
Right. You got it. That
wow.
Feel. See,
yeah.
That's why, for me, drums, real drummers versus drum machines, the difference is that we have a heart. So our pulse, the other humans can relate to our pulse. It's a natural pulse, and it versus this mechanical machine. And this sounds good. It sounds good, but eventually you get bored with it because it's like it's not moving. It's doing something unnatural, and that's staying the same.
It's not the same as your arms just wailing. Doing the thing with your arms and the cymbals, it's not like that at all. You just hit a button.
Well, I remember back in...
It's not that human pocket.
Yeah, yeah. I remember back in the day, back in the late 70s, I was doing some stuff with Entombed, and they hired us to reproduce some of the Motown songs, and it was for a project.
Mm-hmm.
So they gave us the original master tapes to listen to, and while we were listening, man, we heard all kinds of stuff was slowing down, speeding up, and these are hit records we're talking about, little slightly speeding up or very slightly, or we heard people cracking jokes on the live vocal tracks and so forth. So you know, that's the kind of stuff where you wouldn't do that with a sequencer. You'd make everything so perfect that, you know, and then it makes you realize, no, it doesn't have to be perfect like that. That's not going to, that's not the reason why it's a hit, you know. We heard all kinds of problems with the live stuff. This is Motown.
Man, that's a certain discipline there, to listen to just study each of those little elements, man. It takes a special type of discipline to do that. And that's one of the things that we're going to segue. That's a perfect segue to, let's take it back to 1980s, because I want to take a quick break. We got about an hour, 1 minute left of the show. Of course, we're having one of these red cup Kool-Aid conversations. I mean, out here by the fire, bonfire. Well, it's hot outside, but out here in the patio, just having red Kool-Aid with a red cup. It's just that type of conversation we having. But I want to, in 1980, man, we want to talk about In Search of the Rainbow Seekers. That's a psychedelic album. I love that album. Of course, Entombed, working with, of course, rest in peace, James Entombed. And, of course, he's from Philly, by the way. Howard King, right. Edward Moore, Sinclair Acey, Reggie Lucas. Talk a little bit about that album, because we're going to take a quick break, a music break, and I want to play one of the songs, Give It On Up, and that's one of my favorites when I was 6 years old. I'm keeping it real. But talk a little bit about the making of that album and working with these guys to come together and just make this brilliant psychedelic, jazz, funk, any type of gumbo that you want to put in to add to the gumbo, whatever adjective you want to add. Please talk a little bit about that album before we go ahead and go into it.
Yeah, well, I would say that that album was the brainchild for the most part of M2May. M2May was highly influenced by George Clinton, as we all was, but especially M2May. And he had the concept to want to go through with it. So he basically kind of had the songs and had kind of told us what he wanted and so forth. And we just kind of helped him craft it in the way that he wanted. And, you know, because he trusted us, you know, we all kind of added our own little personalities as well. But that's, I would say that was his baby.
Wow. And guys, if you give for all the listeners out there, if you on YouTube, you get a chance, well, after the show, but if you go on YouTube, there is a vintage Soul Train performance of this song that I'm about to play on M2May, and you see Hubert back there doing what he's doing and the outfits. I love the outfits back then. Of course, you definitely tell that there's a little Parliament funkadelic influence there, and it's just a great album. And of course, I want to play Give It On Up. Guys, you're listening to Solar Records Radio. Of course, John Fleming, Wardell Pies Jr., of course, we have the legendary Hubert Eaves, man. Before I go into this song, I got to say this, man. Tawatha Agee, her voice, your opinion. I mean, I know what you're probably going to say, but her voice is just amazing. It was one of my favorite voices as a kid growing up, going to Juicy Fruit or whatever. But just hearing that album, hearing her voice just take command. I mean, and she's still out there doing it right now, man. Have you heard from her? Have you got a chance to talk to her? Or have you kept in touch with some of the members, of course, who's still blessed to be here?
That song that I sent you that has the snippet of my new track?
Mm-hmm.
I got her helping me do backgrounds on it. That's only about 6 months old as far as
wow.
the performance. Yeah, so, yeah, we were in touch and she was. We talked about a little bit about, you know, the passing of M2May. So I'm sure we'll be doing more. We did a song when Reggie Lucas passed. I played a song at his funeral, and I had D-Train singing as well as Tawatha, and they were doing a duet.
Whoa.
And it was their voices and piano. So that was
man.
I guess 2 years ago, maybe. Yeah,
woo,
but I love to
man.
And she came in and did them backgrounds. Bam, 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 bam. I was like, oh, shit. I almost forgot. <man. laughs>
It's all good. Guys, again, you're listening to Solar Records Radio, of course, Throwback Thursday night. Don Fleming, Wardell Pies Jr. Let's take it back to 1980. Of course, this album, Funkadelic, well, I'm going to say Funkadelic, but it's a funky album, In Search of the Rainbow Seekers, man. Check it out. The name of the song, of course, I'm going to go ahead and play it in the background. Give It On Up if you want to. You guys keep it locked right here at Solar Records Radio.
Get it. Got to give it up.
You're listening to Solar Records Radio. Of course, it is Throwback Thursday. That was music from the lovely Miss Stephanie Mills from the from 1980, from the album Sweet Sensation. That is the title song. And, of course, before that, from Entombe, Giving On Up, If You Want To. Of course, we have tonight's featured artist, Mr. Hubert E. III, of course, hanging out with us. In the last go, we're over the stretch. We're about to close it out a little bit, man. That album, Sweet Sensation, by Stephanie Mills, that song, talk a little bit about working on that song, man. It was just 1980 was to me, again, I was in L.A. at the time, and you know, SOS Man, And the Beat Goes On by the Whispers, Sweet Sensation, is it What You Gonna Do With My Lovin'? All of these songs was part of my life and part of my soundtrack, man. It's like y'all was wrecking shop in 1980.
Well, yeah, back when we did that album was so much fun, man. We were really in tune with each other during that album. We hung out, we ate together, we cracked jokes, we did, you know, it was just fun all the way around. We were like a family. And, you know, it comes through. And I remember when we were doing Sweet Sensation, I was in the studio, and Reggie and Entombe played me the track, and it didn't have my keyboard part on it. And so mm-hmm. It was just kind of straight, right? And it said, Sweet Sensation. And I remember, man, I was trying to think of what could I do to make this thing come alive, you know, because it felt like it needed something, and I didn't know what it was. And so I was messing around, and if you notice, there's a part in there where I'm saying, Sweet Sensation.
Yeah.
And I remember when I did it, everybody in the studio came in and ran in and said, oh, shit. That's it. And I'll never forget that day, because it was a good day for me. It was like, you know, I was kind of bored with, you know, sometimes you can get bored doing certain types of songs. And then you can find just the right ingredient that it needs. And then it really makes you feel good when you can contribute.
Man, and contribute you did, man. And again, we were talking a little bit about, of course, that transition into that whole synth funk new wave sound going into the 80s. And like I said, you hear it at Solar. I troll Wardell about the sound on Solar, but it's a great sound nonetheless. Kind of transitioning into D-Train. Talk a little bit about just going into me. Going in, working with James D-Train Williams and just making these brilliant albums with him and some of the greatest songs that you did talk about. We're going to play on the show, but just talk about just that magic, making five albums with D-Train and being a part of that whole, that synth, that funky synth sound, man.
Well, let me go back to when I said I had been working on the Prophet 5 synthesizer and I had been coming up with stuff because I love programming it. No, I actually mm-hmm. had the track to You're the One for Me already done, but it was all keys, just the way you hear it on the record. That's I already had that done, and I had recorded it onto a cassette player, you know, back and forth with different. At that time, I had I had an 8-track machine, and I would just play live. You know, an overdub till I got that track. And so anyway, Will Downing was a young kid in the at Erasmus High School, and my son went to Erasmus. Mm-hmm. So I was going to a talent show that they were having, and that's when I heard Will as the young kid, and he was sounding like Al Jarreau. And so anyway, I told him about it. I said, you know, when they finished, I said, oh, man, you're good. You're good, man. You know, got potential. You sound like Al Jarreau. And he said, oh, that's my favorite singer. And he said, you know what, Mr. East, would you be interested in helping me put together a demo? And I said, sure, come talk to me. We'll see what we can come up with. So anyway, he came to me, and we started working on a song. And once we got it where we wanted it, he said, I got this friend of mine, my schoolboy, my homeboy, to come and help me do background. And so he said, I'm going to invite him in to come in and do the session. Okay. I said, sure, bring him in. So anyway, he brings him in to do backgrounds, and it's James D. Train Williams. And I heard that voice, and I was like, oh, my God. See, because Will has a different kind of voice. Will was, you know, very soft and smooth. But when I heard Dee's voice, I was like, oh, man, I got to hook up with this young dude. So I told him what I wanted to do, and I brought him to the house, and I said, hey, man, I got this track, and I want you to see what we can come up with. So we both went and ate, and we laid down on the ground, and we just was just trying to write lyrics. And all of a sudden, he was like, he just jumped up. With this new love I found, takes my feet up off the ground to fly away. I was like, oh, my God. Wait a minute. So, I mean, he just was nonstop, man. I said, I see why they call you D-Train. That's going to be the name of this group, D-Train. So that's how we got started. And that first song,
man.
Like I said, was number one dance song, man. It was all over New York, all over, you know, all over.
And again, go ahead. I'm sorry. Let me cut you off.
I just wanted to say, just working with him, man, it was such a joy because he, I've always said this, he knows it. I tell everybody, if God would have given me a voice, that would be the voice I would have wanted. That's his voice. He was like an extension of what I wanted, what I was doing with keyboards. I could throw anything with him at him, and he could take it and make it and rise. You know, in other words, you know, like I say, I'll see you and raise you one. That, you know, and it didn't matter what kind of genre, dance, R&B, whatever, man. He was just one of them. He's just one of them voices, one of them talents.
That song, I mean, 1981, 1982, it's still new. It's still fresh. I heard it at the skate rink last week. So it's something about, it's just timeless. But it was ahead of its time, even at that. You see what I'm saying to me, you know, and especially that synth riff on "You're the One for Me." It's just amazing. It's very memorable. And of course, Wardell teased me because I tell people that I'm a gamer, and we were talking a little bit about, you know, you saying your love for rappers and how, you know, a lot of sampling has kind of just gave you guys kind of a newfound attention. Where people go down this rabbit hole and listen to a lot of that vintage music. And one of the cool things, I remember the song when I was 7 years old, but playing something like Grand Theft Auto and hearing "You're the One for Me," I jumped out of my chair, literally. My wife's like, what are you doing? I'm like, D-Train, this song is on Grand Theft Auto. How did that come about? I want to ask that quick question. How did that come about? Hush, Wardell. How did that come about, getting that on the Grand Theft Auto soundtrack?
To be honest with you, I don't know. It showed up. I found out about it after it was done, you know. But once it was done, you know, of course, I wanted to make sure that I knew where the bank was. So
there you go.
But then I found out that, you know, with games, it's not the same as records. And Wardell, you probably know this now too. You know, they do a buyout type thing, and so whoever's in charge of publishing companies and so forth will be offered a buyout, and it's not anywhere near what it should be. It's not, you know, they don't have rules. Or hadn't established rules for games like they do for records.
Wow.
I know.
I did not know that.
I didn't know either.
I was pissed off when I found out, too.
Yeah, I have a lot of friends that are pissed off about that stuff, and it's just, you know.
I feel like I done stitched on y'all. No, go ahead.
No, go ahead. That's the reality that we live in, being a songwriter. And so you just basically brought it to the forefront. And that's all good. It's all good.
Yeah.
But a lot of times, it's not just companies that will take advantage of us, but it's also publishers that will take, if you were not a publisher in the beginning, and they won't tell you, they'll just advance, get the advance money and keep on moving when they're supposed
That's
to
right.
share with the writers. But they don't tell you until you come to them and say, hey, is there anything that's coming in? You got to go through all that crap. So it's a tough game to be in. I mean, you there's a lot of
and I never want to be in the position that I feel like I'm speaking for both of y'all. But I just feel like it's kind of a double-edged sword. The good part of it is it's crossing and reaching that generational gap. You know, it's kind of bridging that generational gap where kids can kind of go back and go down that rabbit hole and just get that vintage music. And if you know, if you're on Spotify or Tidal or all of these music streaming services, they can get your money. Hopefully you guys can get compensated on that. On the other hand, if someone owns the publishing or, you know, the masters or whatever, then sometimes you might not even get a cent out of that. And the fact that, hey, someone told Hubert just randomly, your song is on Grand Theft Auto 5, and you probably didn't even know about it. You know?
Yeah, well,
that's just amazing to me.
Yeah, well, it's not like you don't get paid. It's just that you don't get paid nearly what they're making. That's what makes it almost – that's why it's so unfair because, you know, the people that are in charge of handling the actual business can, you know, depending how it's set up, man, and usually – you know, like back in the days when I was, you know, learning this stuff and putting out some of my best stuff, that was 40 years ago. You know what
mm-hmm.
I mean? 35
right.
years ago. Yeah. You don't know everything then. You don't know all of the loopholes and stuff. You're just so excited about doing what you do. You know, it's like, okay. I don't want a contract right now. I'm working on this song. I got this part I got to put in. So that kind of stuff gets so many of us and has gotten them, you know, through history, especially black artists.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it seems like historically we get that short end of the stick. And it gets tiring for me as a former history teacher. It bugs the hell out of me, you know, when you hear all of these, you know, the musics and from a musical standpoint, from the music business standpoint, you know, and no disrespect to Elvis or anything like that, but there's been a lot of shady deals that was going on that a lot of artists that look like you and I that got the short end of the stick historically. And again, man, it seems like there's a new way. There's kind of a polished way of doing it today. And again, my thing is we just want to celebrate you, want to celebrate Wardell, want to celebrate all the artists that we have on this show and just let it know, hey, we hear you. We understand you. Social media.
Can I ask
before you get out of here?
Wardell?
Oh, please. The floor is yours.
Please. Wardell.
Yes, sir.
Man, what was
yes,
it like? What was it like working with Leon Silvers?
I didn't hear you. Who was it?
Oh,
like,
this is
what,
good.
Who?
Leon Silvers.
Leon Silvers.
Oh, it was, well, you know, Leon and I, we were friends, and then we became roommates. And so I was always around him from the time the Solar thing got started. And so we were so tight, you know, and that's really good for a bass player and a drummer. Because we're supposed to be that way in the studio, right? So being around him and we started doing those hits for Dick Griffey, and those records just took off. And so what I learned from Leon was pocket. I didn't know what he was talking about. I had no idea what pocket was because I was a jazz drummer. I played Latin jazz. I was into progressive jazz. I was into Return to Forever and, you know, Billy Cobham, Tony Williams, and all those guys doing all that
fusion,
crazy stuff. And so, right. So, yeah, fusion.
Mm-hmm.
So then when I get out to California and I'm, you know, trying to learn this pocket thing, it was just, you know, you had to be disciplined. You had to learn how to, you got, it's cool that you're really smart and you got all these intelligent, all these big intellectual words, but they're not needed.
Right.
Pocket,
right.
Right. So you got all these skills, but you got to learn how to hold back and be just just drive the groove as a drummer. You got to drive the train, right? And then the bass player and the drummer, that's y'all are the foundation of the groove. So I was real fortunate that I grew up with a bass player in Philadelphia, and that's so when I got to California and was with Leon, there you go. It was the same kind of thing, just a different person with a different mentality and a great opportunity as the producer for Solar Records. So it was great working with Leon because I learned pocket. I learned how to be disciplined. I learned, you know, how to write songs, how to produce. And I met a lot of amazing, very, very people I grew up listening to on the radio all the time. And so it was great. It was great. I mean, I can't think of, you know, every day I talk about Leon on the radio some way or another because there's always something that comes up. But every Friday we talk about the sound of Los Angeles Records. And but that was the launching of my career, right? Because after that I went to A&M and then I went to different publishing companies out in New York with Jelly Bean Benitez out there where you are. And I worked with, you know, Lost in Music and did a lot of stuff, worked with a company in South Africa. So it was just, but it was a great launching board for me. And I felt really blessed because of it.
Man. You all had such a pocket, man, and I have so much respect for Leon, man, because, you know, even as playing synth bass, you know, I just love the pockets that he played in, man. And if you get a chance to speak to him anytime soon, tell him that he's got a brother here. Hubert Eaves loves him, man, loves him. And you too. You too, because you all put together stuff, man, you know, that. You know, that's why I said embarrassed to ask you, where do I know that name from?
No, that's all good, man. I'm going to see Leon next week, so I'll tell him what you said, and he probably feels the same way about you too, man. So it's all good. We, you know, we just, you know, two different coasts doing our thing, and you know, it's so weird because I'm from the East Coast, but my whole career has been on the West Coast, and so... But I will tell him what you said, man. Look forward to that.
Okay,
I look forward to meeting you.
Wow. Yeah, you too, man. Both of y'all. And I also sent you that link. You should have had it by now.
It's already uploaded.
Yeah.
I already uploaded it, and I just put it under his name, Don. So because he didn't put the title on there, so I just put it under his name. So yeah.
Okay.
So yeah.
Cool. And we'll definitely be able to highlight it. We'll definitely be able to highlight it on Wednesday, because on Wednesday we have indie jazz, independent music, and of course Jazz Wednesday.
This thing is funk, straight up funk, brother. Straight up funk.
And it's a snippet. It's a snippet.
It's only about maybe 30.
It's just a snippet.
40,
it's not the whole thing. Yeah,
I'm ready to hear the whole thing. I'm just being greedy like that.
Yeah.
No, I don't want
to. But he wants people to go buy it. He wants people to go buy it.
I got two videos coming with it.
Oh yeah, there you go.
Okay.
There you go.
Okay.
So when are you releasing the song?
I'm working on a whole project and. I'm finishing songs. That's why I'm just going to be working tonight. So, but in answer to your question, I was trying to get everything done by August 17th, which is my birthday. So that was kind of a birthday present I want to get to myself. So I got about five songs done. I got a couple more to do. And
Awesome.
And, you know, I'll be releasing things, but I just wanted to make sure I got the whole project done.
Amen. This is your
second
album. Definitely
looking forward to it.
This is the second album that I've done in my whole life, man. So I may never ever do another
Congratulations.
One.
Congratulations. Congratulations, man.
Thank you.
Yes,
thank you, man.
Man.
All right.
Y'all
really
got to exchange. We definitely enjoy it. Y'all got to exchange numbers because this might be something in the making. You know, Hubert Eaves Wardell collab going on. You know, I'm just dreaming, but for real, man.
Well, we just text each other, so we got each other's number.
Yeah, we got it.
Yeah, thank you for that, Don.
Don't be a stranger. We're gonna finish it up right now, man. we just want to I want to thank you, man, for taking the time out of your schedule to, you know, since we held you hostage for about an hour and a half and some change. But I definitely let you know, please don't be a stranger. And please come back whenever you got some music out or whenever you want to come on there and just talk. We'd love to have you on the show, man, and definitely want to keep your legacy going and keeping the legacy alive. Any final thoughts, any final words that you want to say to the listeners?
Yeah, I just want to say that I appreciate all the listeners over all these years, even though you may not have known who I was or even cared, or maybe you still don't. It's okay. But you may have danced to something that I was involved in. You may have sung a melody that I was involved in or whatever. So I may be in your heart and soul, and you don't even know it. But you are definitely in mine, because without you all, you know, we can't exist. You know, it doesn't go anyplace. So we're all connected.
Most definitely, most definitely. Well, hey, enjoy the rest of your night. Ladies and gentlemen, of course, all the listeners out there, the legendary Mr. Hubert Eaves III hanging out. Please do not be a stranger. Come back. Come back on the show whenever, man. And we're definitely going to keep your legacy and your music going and all that good stuff, man. And again, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure to have you on.
Oh, and such a pleasure, man. And can I ask you a favor, Don, please? Even if you can't...
Anything. Talk to me.
Even if you can't play that little snippet on the radio, when you get a chance to hear the little snippet, hit me back. Just tell me what you think of it.
You got it.
Whenever.
You got it. Well, hey,
whenever.
Most definitely, most definitely. I got you covered. And please, come back whenever. And I mean that. Guys,
yeah.
You're listening to Solar Records Radio. Of course, Incomparable, Hubert Eaves.
Thank you
all.
You're
the One for Me by D-Train. Thank you, guys. Keep it locked right here.
ripped out for my love.
Okay, sir, what seems to be the problem? Officer, this woman is a thief. She broke into my house, caught me sleep, and stole my heart. Even after I gave her all my money, bought her a house, I gave her jewelry, and bought her a brand new car. Well, I believe we have her in our custody now. Is this the woman? Is this the woman? Hey, get over here.
Radio, of course, Throwback Thursday Night, wrapping it up. Of course, that was some new music, a little snippet from Hubert Eaves the Third. Of course, got some new nice little song there, a little snippet that he wanted us to play. Nice little funky and funny tune. I love that, man. Thank you, Wardell, for uploading that, man. For real.
Oh yeah, it's all good. Is he still here?
No, he's gone. He's gone, man.
Okay.
I just told him I wanted to go ahead and play it for him and everything, and I appreciate you hooking that up. I really do.
Oh yeah,
you're that's outside good. On the farm. He's out. You hear all that background noise. He's out there on the farm, man. But I had to get him back on the show to close it out, man, because that was just an amazing. What an amazing artist. What an amazing talent. You guys, of course, I let you guys just go at it as far as the conversation. Because that's what it's about, man. It wasn't about, Wardell's taking over. No, do your thing, man.
Yeah.
I love the fact that you guys are able to connect that way. And the fact that you was listening to his stuff, he was listening to y'all's stuff. He was a big fan of Solar when we talked off the air.
Yeah.
He was a big fan of what you did, man. And the fact that, you played drums for Shalimar. You played for the Whispers. You played Keep On Loving Me. You know, he was a big fan. He just turned into a fan. So,
Yes, sir.
I love that.
That's a blessing. It's a good thing. I'm glad you had him on, and You just keep on doing what you do, Don. Thank you for bringing great content to the station. We appreciate that, man. That is good.
Most definitely.
I'm glad he's using you.
And we're gonna get his son on. And of course, his son, of course, Hubert Eaves the IV, jazz artist, got some music that he wanted me to highlight for his son. So we're definitely gonna hook that up on Indie Jazz Wednesday, man. Hubert Eaves the IV. So another generation of Eaveses. Is Eaveses, is that a word? But definitely, want to highlight the music and keep the legacy going here at Solar Records. What's up for tonight and what's up for tomorrow?
Goldie Mac, tonight, 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Tune in. And then tomorrow we celebrate the sound of Solar Records Radio at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time with Don Fleming and myself, Wardell Fudge Jr. Just going down memory lane and remembering the good old days of Solar when Shalimar had that big hit that came out of the blockbuster second time
yeah.
around. The Whispers and the Beat Goes On and you know, Dynasty and Lakeside, It's All the Way Live, and, you know, on and on and on, and Midnight Star with no parking on the dance floor. Who else, man? Come on, you can name some of them. Climax,
man, dude,
was a meeting
yeah,
in the ladies' room.
Yeah. Collage,
the deal,
you know.
Yeah.
Yes, the deal.
The deal, and then the Silvers. You know, I mean, just a lot
of
good music that came out of the little company that could and the little company that did. So, guys, tune in. Come hang out with us. Have a great time. And thanks for being the best part of Solar Records Radio. We appreciate you guys. And thank you,
yes,
Don.
Yes, indeed. Hey, no doubt, man. Thank you. Thank you guys again. I love the fact that, you know, you guys were able to kind of, he asked you questions because he was a fan of Leon, a fan of you. And it's like, where do I know your name from? And this and this and this. So I love those type of conversations, man. But anyway, thank you guys for tuning in. All the listeners out there, let's go ahead and close out with some positivity. This is music from D-Train. Keep on. Don Fleming. I'm Don Fleming, of course, with Wardell Fudge. We are out. Have a safe and happy Thursday night. We'll see you guys tomorrow. Have a good one. Don't stop reaching till you touch down.